KTY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Well, thank you for joining us on Crosstalk today on VCY America. Ladies and gentlemen, those who have been pursuing a globalistic world order have been thrown a curveball by our president, President Trump, who has been by and large, promoting a U.S., our nation as a sovereign nation, not beholden to the world body. And as a result, there's a call for the creation of a new group of nine, a G9, if you will, who is determined to save this world order from a President Trump. Who's behind this? What is the scheme? What is their tactics? What's the path forward for them? Well, joining us today, we welcome back Alex Newman, an international freelance journalist, author, educator, and consultant. His articles are frequently appearing in The New American. He also writes for Freedom Project Media. Alex is a co-author of the book Crimes of the Educators. Alex, nice to have you back with us on Crosstalk.
Jim, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
You know, as I read your article, it all sounds like the title of a new comic book series with superheroes calling it Committee to Save the World Order. Alex, give us some background. What is the genesis of this movement? What's happening?
Sure. Well, thanks again for the opportunity to speak on these issues. I think it's so important that Americans, and particularly Christians, understand kind of the forces that think they're shaping the world here. And the Council on Foreign Relations is one of those groups. It's probably the most powerful think tank that you've never heard of or that you've heard very little about. It's based in New York. But, just for some perspective, Hillary Clinton went to their new Washington satellite office when she was Secretary of State. And she said, oh, I'm so glad you guys have a new office here. Then I won't have to go as far to be told what I should be doing and how I should think about the future.
Oh, my.
Right, so, it's a powerful group. And then you have... Republicans have been very, very much involved with this group as well. Dick Cheney was a director for a long time. He bragged, you can watch the video on YouTube, he bragged that he didn't used to tell the folks back home in Wyoming when he was running for re-election. So, going back generations now, this organization, founded in the 1920s, has really become incredibly influential in creating policy, and it is completely globalist in its outlook. I mean, almost to a man, right? They have several thousand members. The names are posted up on their website, which is very handy for those of us who are concerned about globalism. But they've been pretty clear and pretty open about their agenda, which is, they often call it the New World Order, is how they talk among themselves and on national television, when they talk about these things. And they're very concerned about President Trump, as we found out just recently with an article they put out. So.
Yeah, and let's learn about this. I mean, we're talking about the formation of a group of nine, like a G9. What countries are we speaking of?
That's what's so interesting here is that they're literally calling for America's closest allies to form a military and economic alliance. They don't say against the United States, right? But I mean, that's what they're implying, at least against President Trump. And we're talking, South Korea. We're talking Japan, Australia, Canada, the United Kingdom, and of course they want to bring the globalist super state known as the European Union in for good measure. So it would be eight of our closest allies plus the emerging super state based in Brussels called the European Union. And they're openly talking here about creating a military alliance and an economic alliance that, as they see it, would hold down the fort, so to speak, on this world order that they've been building now for several generations. At least until they can get rid of Trump, is how they frame it in this article they wrote.
Who are the key drafters? Who are the key individuals behind this?
Well, the two who actually wrote the article that I reference in my article, and people should go read this article for themselves rather than just taking my word for it. I mean, you can read it right on their website. But one of them is Ivo Dadler, I think is how you pronounce his name. He's actually Dutch originally, but he's been in the United States for a long time, and he's been pretty closely affiliated with Democrats, with Obama and Bill Clinton, he's done work for, and these types of people. And then the other is, I think his name is James Lindsay, and he's been more of a longtime senior bureaucrat, typically associated with Republicans. So they're kind of putting a bipartisan face on this idea. And you know, these are the two main guys, but when the Council on Foreign Relations pushes something like this, you can be almost 100% sure that it's not just the two frontmen who are supporting this idea, because what you tend to see, and Admiral Chester Ward, who was a member of the Council on Foreign Relations for 16 years before kind of defecting and blowing the whistle, if you will, he said, basically, if you want to know what the policy of the United States government is going to be a few years in advance, all you have to do is read the Council on Foreign Relations publications. They have a magazine called Foreign Affairs. And if you want to see where policy is going, just read the magazine. So, you know, this is not just two foreign policy wonks putting out some ideas. This is a policy proposal that very likely we will start seeing coming into being within the next few, you know, if not months, then certainly years. So.
And it's interesting because some have thought the CFR is just a non-entity, you know, just this big boogeyman that's out there. But Alex, I mean, they are really working toward this globalistic effort. It's a committee here to save what they call the world order. They've got their own website at foreignaffairs.com. I mean, they are legitimately, working for an illegitimate cause, is my opinion, to bring about globalism. But this is an entity that's got a lot of force, a lot of power behind them.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, if you go and look at the membership roster, what you'll find is that Republican and Democratic administrations going back many, many decades now, it doesn't matter if we're talking about Bush or Clinton or Obama or, you know, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter, all of these administrations have been dominated by members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And I mean most of the key cabinet positions, directors of, you know, the intelligence agencies and the bureaucracies are always recruited from this organization. And, you know, the organization has, to their credit, you know, they haven't really hidden too seriously what they're up to. I mean, if you read their publications, where they're coming from is absolutely clear. I mean, they admit, I have a quote that I use from their magazine, Foreign Affairs, pretty regularly. It was from the Undersecretary of State, Richard Gardner. He said, yeah, you know, well, we've realized that if we want to get rid of sovereignty, we have to erode it piece by piece rather than the old-fashioned frontal assault because we'll be more successful that way. And that's kind of their mindset, right? Just erode national sovereignty, national independence, piece by piece, until they can gradually, you know, to quote Admiral Chester Ward, who I mentioned earlier, the membership is completely pervaded by people who, as he put it, have this fanatical obsession with submerging the United States into an all-powerful world government. And this is coming from a guy who was a member for 16 years. He wrote a book called Kissinger on the Couch with Phyllis Schlafly, so... You know, this stuff is not hidden. It's just you won't read about it on the front page of the New York Times or the Washington Post.
No, but looking at their article at foreignaffairs.com from September 30th, they talk about their goals and missions and so forth. But they're talking about that the United States, and here's what they say, the very country that championed the order's creation. You know, it's a surprise because they're causing some problems now. But 70 years, and they say U.S. President Harry Truman sketched the blueprint for a rules-based international order, and mentioned now that President Donald Trump has upended it.
Yeah, and you know, that's where they're coming from. In fact, that's how they see President Trump. There's actually a few members of the Council on Foreign Relations in his administration, although far fewer than we've had, again, going back many decades. But, and, you know, he's thrown him a few bones here and there, you know, right when Trump put his national security advisor into place. You know, they came after, he was not a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. He was a great patriot. And so they came after him. They used Mueller to threaten him. They actually threatened his son if he wouldn't plead guilty to these charges. And then they replaced him with a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, H.R. McMaster. But, and, you know, he's got a few CFR people still working in key positions, people like Robert Lighthizer, who's the U.S. Trade Representative and negotiated this U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. But for the most part, you know, Trump has been, just as they say, upending this little world order that they've been building. He's withdrawn us from, you know, at my last count, almost a dozen U.N. agencies and international agreements, including some of the fundamental pillars that they're using to build their world order on, like the Paris Agreement on alleged man-made climate change, the U.N. International Compact on Migration that they were going to use to basically globalize immigration policy. You know, UNESCO, which is the U.N. Education Agency, we're leaving at the end of this year, thanks to President Trump. And so if you look at this, from their perspective, this is disastrous.
The Iran deal was another, wasn't it?
That's right, exactly. The Iran deal was another key one, and the CFR has its fingerprints all over the Iran deal. And, you know, just a couple days ago, he announced that we're withdrawing from the UN Postal Union. They practically dared the International Criminal Court, which is a UN body, to try to bring an American before it. They said, if you try that, we will prosecute you, we will freeze your assets, we do not recognize your authority, you're a kangaroo court. And, I mean, this is unprecedented, and certainly in my lifetime, but, you know, even longer than that. You could go back 80 years and you won't see anybody taking, a battering ram, essentially, to the institutions of globalism like President Trump has done, and that has them very concerned.
Alex Newman is with us here today in Crosstalk. Alex, you pointed out in your article that former President Obama left a note in the Oval Office for the incoming president. What did that note have to say on this issue?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. I kind of gleaned that from one of the news reports I was reading. And he basically tried to urge President Trump to maintain the American quote-unquote leadership of the rules-based world order. And, you know, that is the globalist perspective, right? The globalist faction in U.S. politics, whether they openly announce themselves as such or not, has really been in control, particularly of our foreign policy, for so many generations now that for them, you know, the idea of a guy running on a platform, you know, Trump told us when he was running, I'm not a globalist. I'm opposed to globalism. Mm-hmm. We're going to support Americanism, and we're going to, you know, get rid of these trade deals. He called the UN an enemy of freedom and the United States. This was completely unprecedented. So they knew what was coming. And if you listen to their language, right, it doesn't matter if we're talking about Republicans or Democrats. You had George H.W. Bush go on national television and tell us, hey, we're building a new world order, a world in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to bring about the vision of the UN's founders. You know, and we know who the UN founders were. You had Joseph Stalin on one side, and then on our side, we sent a guy called Alger Hiss, who they loved so much that they actually made him into the first Secretary General, including of the conference that founded the UN. And then we ended up having to throw him in federal prison for being a spy for Joseph Stalin. So why we would want to use the UN's military to build a world order based on the vision of the UN's founders is beyond me. But Obama uses the same rhetoric. Joe Biden uses the same rhetoric. Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton have both called for a new world order using those exact terms. So, you know, that's what Trump is dealing with here. He is facing a massive amount of momentum and a massive amount of pushback from this globalist faction to oppose what has started being called a Trumpism, so to speak, mm-hmm. right?
So this whole body is, in essence, being formed to be kind of a stopgap until we change presidents in the United States?
Yeah, now if you read the Foreign Affairs article, that's exactly what they're talking about. They're proposing this alliance to basically hold the world order in place, regardless of what Trump tries to do, until they can get rid of Trump and hopefully get a more pliable globalist in the White House. And they very much expect to be able to do that at some point, whether they can do it in 2020 or whether they have to wait until Trump retires out of office in 2024, we'll have to see. But they totally expect, as you can tell from reading this article, that eventually America will be governed once again by a globalist. And at that point, they say, then we can take an even bigger step forward, because we will have kind of distributed the power in this new world order beyond just the United States, so we'll never risk something like this happening again.
And folks, many of you will not forget that statement that came from President George Herbert Walker Bush, desiring that, seeing that new world order. We're going to be back in just 60 seconds. Alex Newman is our guest today. We're talking about this committee to save the world order. We're going to be looking further at some of their goals and some of their objectives, calling for military cooperation and certainly having an impact upon the world economy as well. This is Crosstalk coming your way from the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, are whales related to any land animals?
Chris, evolutionists think they are. In fact, this is one of their strongest arguments these days, that whales evolved from land animals with legs. Some say that the ancestor looked like a cow or maybe a wolf or a hippopotamus. Well, I think they're all wrong. Recently, the head portion of a whale fossil was found in California. It didn't have the rear portion at all, but this didn't keep evolutionists from claiming that they had small rear legs. Chris, why do we believe them? Why do even evolutionists believe them when they make up stories like this? The Bible says that God created whales on day 5 of creation week. They've always been whales, and they still are whales. Even whales go back to Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Visit our web store at icr.org/store and use the promo code FACT at the checkout when ordering your That's a Fact DVD.
Alex Newman is our guest today. We're talking about this committee to save the world order, and I can tell here, Alex, though we're covering a number of points, they really need to read your article on this. How is it that our listeners can do that?
Hey, thank you so much, Jim, for the opportunity. And if people want to find this online, just go to your favorite search engine other than Google, because Google is, you know, very busily now trying to censor Christian voices, conservative voices. You can still find the article on Google, though, if you insist. And just look up thenewamerican.com, Alex Newman, G9 Committee, Trump, World Order, some combination of those terms, and you'll find it. Or you can go straight to thenewamerican.com and use our search bar at the top. Just type in, you know, any combination of the terms we've been using today, and you'll be sure to find it.
Thenewamerican.com. Alex, there's actually, like, warning that's being given that if the United States withdraws, it's going to reduce our ability to shape global rules. Are we just missing our piece of the pie by bowing out of these things?
Yeah, well, you know, that's the narrative that they want to push. And it's ironic. Nobody ever asked Americans if we wanted global rules, right? We consented to the creation of our Constitution when we sent delegates, some time ago to ratify this and approve it and write it. But nobody ever asked the American people if we were willing to accept global rules and lose the ability to govern ourselves. Now, these CFR globalists, if you listen to them, well, you know, we have this prestigious position because we get to shape these global rules. Well, you know, what about the people of other countries? Do we have the right to impose rules on them? What kind of rules are we talking about? Who's going to actually create these rules? Nobody asked me about these rules. And so I think we need to have a real discussion about this question of global rules, right? I mean, we know God created nations, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Way back at the Tower of Babel, God ordained that there should be nations. And these globalists have this fanatical determination to undermine even the concept of nations and move toward this globalist system. So I think at the very least, we need to be having a national and an international discussion about whether we're prepared to live under global rules and who's going to make these global rules. Because you have people like this at the CFR, you have the recently departed Secretary General of the United Nations calling the UN General Assembly the Parliament of Humanity. Well, you know, in the UN General Assembly, a Marxist mass-murdering dictator like Robert Mugabe or Fidel Castro or Kim Jong-un over in North Korea would have the same vote as we here in the United States. That's obscene, right? I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous. And yet, there's this narrative that we ought to surrender to these global rules. And frankly, you know, when they talk about America shaping these global rules, they're not talking about you and I. They're not talking about the people listening to this radio program. They're talking about the people at the Council on Foreign Relations, the people who really dominate policy. And so I think it's good now that this is coming out in the open that we can have a discussion about it.
And they're also warning that if we're not involved, then China's going to be doing it.
Yeah, you know, this, I really hope people will go read my article for no other reason than this, because we've been reporting on what's happening with China for decades now. In fact, we've been doing it since the start of the magazine. But we've been documenting step by step how the exact same globalists at the Council on Foreign Relations and at these globalist think tanks have been aiding and abetting China's rise to power at every step of the way, right? I mean, literally every step of the way. I actually did a cover story in the New American back in 2014 or 15, I believe, talking about the headline was China Staking Claim in the New World Order. And what I showed was that communist Chinese agents, with the deliberate connivance of members of our State Department and the Barack Obama administration, and long before that, were conspiring to put these communist Chinese operatives in power over key United Nations agencies, right? The whole world just found out that a communist Chinese operative was running Interpol, the self-styled global law enforcement agency, and that only became major news. We covered it right when it happened, but that only became major news because the Chinese government kidnapped its own minion. So that's what we're dealing with. And to try to blame this on Trump is not just dishonest, it's just a flat-out lie. But that's what they're doing.
Alex, we're seeing the tentacles of George Soros and so many different things today. Is he engaged in this matter at all?
He absolutely is. In fact, Soros, I think, is a big player in funding the pressure from below, right? A lot of these radicals that we see out in the street that are, you know, trying to tear down the fabric of society, trying to tear down civility, rioting in the streets, destroying property, threatening violence against people. You know, a lot of that is funded by George Soros. So he's a big part of the puzzle. He's very much involved with this globalist faction that we talked about. And he's a key player. Now, I think a lot of people on the conservative side like to think that George Soros is the be-all and end-all of this. First of all, I would urge you to read Ephesians 6:12, right? I mean, when you really get to the top of the pyramid, right, we're not dealing with flesh and blood anymore.
Right.
But second of all, George Soros is not the top of the pyramid, even just in the physical realm, right? I mean, we know he got a lot of his initial funding from the Rothschild dynasty, for example. David Rockefeller, who just passed away a couple years ago, he was another key player here. And he was much more in the shadows than George Soros, right? You never really heard his name much, although he bragged in his own autobiography that, hey, I'm conspiring, was the term he used, with a secret cabal against the best interests of my own country to build a one-world political and economic order. That's straight from his own autobiography. So, you know, Soros is a big part of the puzzle, but he's just one part.
Alex, let's talk about some of these global responsibilities that they want to take on. And at the very top of that list, their proposed agenda is what they're calling economic cooperation. It sounds good, but what does that really mean?
Yeah, you know, when they use the term cooperation and multilateralism and these types of things, what they're really talking about is these I call them pseudo-free trade agreements and pseudo-trade agreements because they masquerade as trade agreements, and yet, you know, trade is only a fraction of what's involved in these things. You know, if we take NAFTA or the quote-unquote free trade agreements that underpin the European Union or the African Union or the Union of South American States or Putin's Eurasian Union, right, no coincidence that this is happening all over the world. You know, they only deal with trade tangentially. What's really happening here is an overt surrender of sovereignty, the creation of international mechanisms of governance, right? International bureaucracies, international kangaroo courts with the power to overrule, for example, our state governments and our federal government. And that's what they're really talking about. And so when they propose this G9 and this economic alliance and this economic cooperation, what they're really talking about is, hey, we ought to set up these supranational structures underpinned by supranational, quote-unquote, trade agreements and economic agreements that will essentially allow unelected bureaucrats and unelected members of these kangaroo tribunals to make policy decisions for the formerly self-governing sovereign peoples involved in these networks.
They also want to weaponize foreign aid. Describe that for us.
Yeah, well, you know, that's one of the things that they propose that this G9 committee do to save the world order from Trump. And they basically say, hey, you know, this G9 committee, if you take all the money that they spend on foreign aid combined, it's even more than America does. Our Congress, don't ask me why they're still sending around foreign aid when we're $21 trillion in debt and $200 trillion with the unfunded liabilities. It beats me. But they point out that if you take all these economies and all these governments together, they send more foreign aid than we do. And, you know, they don't use the term bribe, but essentially what they're saying is, hey, we can bribe these African governments, these Latin American governments, these Asian governments to continue playing ball on the New World Order, regardless of what Trump does, if we just kind of weaponize, just use this foreign aid as leverage.
They're also calling for military cooperation.
And, you know, that's the really alarming part. I mean, you know, if I was working in the National Security Council right now, I would say, hey, that sounds really suspicious. I mean, you're talking about creating a military alliance against the elected president of the United States because he doesn't like your rules-based global order. You know, I think that ought to be seriously talked about by every American. I mean, why is that not on the television? Why is that not part of the national news schedule right now, right? This is huge. They're talking about taking our closest allies, going back decades, in some cases generations, and having them create a military alliance that would, you know, hold down the New World Order for it while they get rid of our president. This is really, really serious stuff. And if you just kind of read the opaque and bland language that the CFR people use, it doesn't immediately jump out at you. But when you register what they're actually saying, you realize that the implications of this are monumental.
They really are. And, I mean, folks, do you see that if they're successful, that this group could actually launch an attack against the United States? I mean, they are seeing so many things unravel before them, as you pointed out, Alex, kind of going down that list of many things President Trump has done. And if President Trump were reelected, I mean, they've been throwing fits since when he was first elected. He's only been in office about 19 months. What would happen if he's elected to a second term and have 8 years?
That's right. And, you know, you can tell that they're very frightened about this. You know, when they start throwing out all these nasty lies and they start calling him a racist and a bigot and a homophobe and Islamophobe and, you know, all these nasty terms that they use. Yeah, you know, it reminds one of, you know, an animal that's trapped in a corner with no way out. You know, I think they see this dream that they've been working on for so long. You know, they've essentially, many of them, devoted their lives and in some cases their fortunes to building up this globalist dream that they have. And then along comes this wrecking ball and says, hey, no, you know, enough of that. We're just going to govern ourselves here in America, as Trump said. We're not going to tell other countries what to do, but we're going to maintain our sovereignty, and all countries need to protect themselves from the threat of global governance. I mean, when you hear the President of the United States, who at least we're told is the most powerful person on the planet, saying those things, these people realize that, hey, you know, if we don't take drastic action, our time might be up. Everything that we've worked for might be going up in smoke. And so I think they're not just concerned. I think they're actually frightened.
Alex, we're less than 2 weeks away from our national election. How will this election impact this matter?
Well, you know, I think that's a huge question. And I think, in some sense, both sides realize the stakes in this election. I think that's why you see Democrats completely going just bonkers. I mean, if you follow the news, you see, you know, the kind of violence, the hatred that's just kind of coming unmasked at this point. I think there's going to be probably a great deal of voter fraud in this election. I mean, the evidence that voter fraud has been used in past elections has just been massive. And I think with the stakes this high, the American people need to be very, very careful in terms of how they vote and in terms of how we handle this election. Because, you know, if they lose, if the Republicans maintain power and Trump manages to kind of keep them going in the general direction that he wants them going in, which is, you know, we need to dismantle this globalism and restore American sovereignty, you know, I wouldn't put it past these globalists to take drastic measures. And, you know, by drastic measures, I mean things that would be very dangerous for our national security, for our economic health, for our well-being as a nation. And so I think we all need to be very concerned about what's happening right now.
Indeed. And, folks, are you praying for this election? Are you engaged? Are you knowledgeable about what's on your ballot? Are you planning to be at the polls on November 6th? And if you're away, that you're making provisions for absentee or early voting? A very, very critical election that's before us. And on another very critical matter, Alex, that you point out, you've got a very interesting point in your article, and you say this: because of the so-called foreign policy and illegal wars pushed by the CFR and its leadership, Christians are facing genocide across the Middle East and beyond. Do you really see that there's a connection between the policies of the CFR and Christian persecution, which has been intensifying?
Oh, I think it's absolutely undeniable. And to anybody who wonders about this, I encourage you, read an article that I wrote. This was actually back in 2012. It was called Christian Massacres, a Result of, or the Fruits of U.S. Foreign Policy. So I actually linked it in this article about the G9 Committee to Save the World Order. I encourage people to go read that, because there is a very clear pattern that has emerged here. Let's look at all the countries where the U.S. government has intervened, and, you know, by U.S. government, I mean really the CFR people who've been running our foreign policy and our defense policy. Look at Iraq, right? Iraq had a vibrant, thriving Christian community of millions of people before the U.S. invasion. Today, they've been all but exterminated. If you find 200,000 Christians left in Iraq, you'd be lucky, right? And they live in absolute fear. They can't worship openly anymore. A lot of them fled to Syria, where we know that the Obama administration was supporting radical jihadists, including known terrorists. I mean, we have this from smoking gun documents from the administration itself, showing that what they were doing. And this is a pattern that we've seen in Ivory Coast, in Afghanistan, and all over the world.
We're going to take a quick break. Alex Newman is our guest. I've got a couple more things we're going to run by him before we open our phone line. So be ready with your questions here for Alex today. But, folks, perhaps you didn't even know there was a committee to save the world order. And its emphasis is really to work in opposition to the Trump administration. We'll be right back.
Pressure is rising. The global atmosphere is morphing as never before. It's time to pay attention to world events to see how the stage is being set for the end times. In the book, End Times Supertrends, author Ron Rhodes presents 15 current trends that point ahead to the fulfillment of Bible prophecy. end times apostasy, the rise of alternative religions, the severe moral decline, the deterioration of religious freedom, the rising persecution and martyrdom of Christians, escalation of cyber attacks, the growing nuclear and EMP threat, the coming cashless world, the rising use of biometrics, the Middle East conflict, the escalating hatred toward Israel, and more. End Times Supertrends is a fascinating book, as you will see all these issues coming together for God's appointed time. It is available for a donation of $16 or more to VCY America. Ask for it when you call 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Alex Newman is our guest today. He writes for The New American, and folks, I'd like to encourage you to read the article. Globalist CFR G9 Committee Must Save World Order from Trump. And you can go to thenewamerican.com, thenewamerican.com. So much more on this issue, but Alex, give us your comment on these trade pacts, AMLO and then the USMCA. Some have compared these to a more mild form of TPP. Some have said, wait a second, these are globalistic pacts that the Trump administration put through. What's your assessment of these? Do they threaten our sovereignty, as some have said?
Well, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this, and I think this is one of the key issues. And as much as I personally have supported what President Trump has done in a wide range of areas, you know, China, globalism, the economy, you know, across a broad range of areas, on this trade agreement, so-called, I think it's important that we all hold the line here. And we've been talking about the Council on Foreign Relations, so I'll just mention two things. The guy who negotiated this agreement on our side, his name is Robert Lighthizer, and he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And many of his minions, his deputies, were actually from the Obama administration. These are Obama holdovers. And when this agreement was released, the head of the Council on Foreign Relations, a gentleman by the name of Richard Haass, said, oh my goodness, you know, not in these words, but oh my goodness, this is great. It's the TPP plus NAFTA plus 10 or 20%. We got to get this done immediately. And so, unfortunately, this is a globalist agreement. It subjects the United States to all sorts of UN agreements, including ones that we've never ratified, the International Labor Organization. It continues these tri-national kangaroo courts, right, these international tribunals that allow foreign governments and foreign companies, including state-owned companies, to sue us in America, either our federal government, our state government, our people, and overturn our policy decisions that we've implemented ourselves. It also sets up these international bureaucracies that are subject to these UN agreements. You can read the text for yourselves. My colleague at the New American, Christian Gomez, has done some fantastic investigative reporting on this, and I'm hoping that Trump will realize what's happened here. I know he's already threatening, you know, if Mexico doesn't do something about this caravan, he's threatening to blow up the USMCA. I hope he will do that. I think that would be fantastic for his agenda and for the American people. And as far as AMLO, you know, that's a wild card, and I speak from experience. I've lived in Mexico longer than I've lived anywhere else in the world. I grew up in Mexico, and I love the Mexican people, but you know, at this point they've elected a very radical leftist, to be charitable about it. And, you know, he kind of ran on a platform of being sort of populist and maybe opposed to some of these agreements with the Yankees up north. But yeah, we'll have to see what ends up happening with him. One thing that's interesting is that he has been calling this a treaty, and in Mexico they're talking about ratifying it the same way one would ratify any other treaty, using the constitutional means that are outlined in their constitution, which are similar to ours. And yet in our case, they're calling it just an agreement, and they're saying that instead of voting on it as a treaty, which would require two-thirds approval in the Senate, which I don't think they'll get, they're talking about just passing it with a majority vote in the House and the Senate. So a lot there. I hope people will do some of their own research on this. Don't take my word for it, but I think this is very bad news for the country.
That would really seem to contradict the president's criticism on some of these, you know, the Iran deal and the climate deal, you know, for the UN deal there as well, the Paris Agreement. It doesn't sound like that's coming from the playbook of President Trump because he criticized these, but yet this is something that's coming forth from his administration.
Yeah, and you know, there's been several times when Trump has done something where I thought, oh my goodness, what is he doing? That kind of contradicts what he said on the campaign trail, and then eventually he's circled back and done the right thing. So at this point, you know, I personally still give him the benefit of the doubt. I assume he hasn't read the all 1,800 pages of this. I assume there's very few people on the planet who have. And my guess is he's putting way too much confidence in not only Robert Lighthizer, this member of the CFR who's serving as the U.S. Trade Representative, but also his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, who was deeply involved, apparently, in drafting this and also in selling it to President Trump. So my guess is, and I don't have any particular inside information on this, but my guess is Trump does not realize everything that's in this agreement. He's been told that, hey, it's going to make it harder for China to set up front companies in Mexico and Canada and ship their stuff in here tax-free, and it's going to do this and that and the other. And it's not everything he wanted, but it's better than the old one, and it'll help keep jobs in America. So my guess is he doesn't realize some of the absolute poison that's in this agreement, and I suspect that when he finds out, assuming he does, he's probably not going to be very happy about it.
Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Folks, your thoughts on this committee to save the world order are really being raised up as kind of a stopgap, you know, to be there to circumvent what the United States is doing. And we see things that they will be, you know, second in military and so forth to the U.S. It almost sounds threatening, Alex, that we are going to be here to save the world, and we are going to be the biggest force against the United States.
Yep. I think threat is the exact right word to use here. They openly talk about, hey, this is going to be, you know, basically the most powerful military in the world after the United States once you join all these together. And, you know, that is a very serious thing to be saying, especially when you're talking about our allies, people that the U.S. taxpayer has been, in many cases, defending and supporting and funding going back many decades. So I think people ought to be very concerned about this.
One last thing before we go to the phones, and that is President Trump has been calling for us pulling out of this nuclear weapons treaty with Russia. Your thoughts on that matter?
I think it's a great idea. You know, the Russians have never obeyed these treaties anyways. So the idea that we're going to handicap ourselves while allowing the Russians to do whatever they want, to me, just strikes me as totally crazy. Unlike a lot of conservatives, I don't believe that Putin is this, great Christian conservative defender of Western civilization. In fact, I think he, as the former head of the KGB, I think he's probably not a very nice guy. I see him openly cooperating and collaborating with the globalists on all different levels, right? He and Henry Kissinger, they go have dinner at each other's houses, and he's busy building a Eurasian Union. And, his government is not a nice one, right? If they don't like a journalist, they take him out. So I think it's the right thing for us to pull out of these terrible agreements, and I hope Trump will do a lot more of it.
Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. The lines are packed right now, but as soon as we take a call, it'll free it up for your calling us here on the broadcast. We're going to begin in Racine, Wisconsin. Lat, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Hi, Alex. The question I have is, do you believe, Alex, through these open borders, because they're so against Donald Trump, the building wall, and they want to get these people amnesty here. Do you believe that through the open borders, if they can destroy our health care and then they can destroy our Social Security, that's when the New World Order will implement their new currency and get rid of the American dollar? And I'll take my question off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent question. Unfortunately, it's multifaceted, and it would probably take me a good half an hour to address all the points there. But I will say very quickly, I absolutely think that the open borders agenda is a key part of this globalist agenda. I was just in Budapest a few weeks ago. I had a meeting, and it's actually on YouTube. People can watch it, with the Secretary of State for Public Diplomacy there. We did an interview, and he talked about this exact question. And the Prime Minister there, Viktor Orban, has been very vocal as well. The agenda, I think, with the open borders is there are several key agendas at work. One of them is to destroy nation states and national identity. Another is to break down Western Christian civilization as we know it. And I think, as you very wisely point out in your question, there is an agenda to overwhelm the welfare states and the ability of government to continue funding all of this, not just in the United States, but all across what used to be called, Western Christian civilization. We're seeing that happen in certain countries now. I think the United States, because of its very privileged position as the issuer of the global reserve currency, has been able to get away with spending more money and borrow more money than it would have otherwise. But I think all of that is a serious risk. And I think, you know, when the chickens come home to roost, and they will, and this will probably be blamed on Donald Trump if it happens within the next 2 or 6 years, it is going to be incredibly painful and incredibly serious. And I think the globalists fully expect to be able to take advantage of that to further their agenda. And in fact, you know, I hate to keep saying I wrote an article about that, but I did write a cover story about this agenda for an international currency back in 2010. It was called Waking Up to a World Currency. And these people have been very, very out in the open about their agenda for a world currency. And they asked Obama's Treasury Secretary at the time, Timothy Geithner, the Chinese had put out a proposal saying we ought to have a global currency issued by the IMF. And they asked Timothy Geithner, the Treasury Secretary at the time, what he thought. And he said, we're actually quite open to that idea. And, you know, it sent the value of the dollar plunging, and they had to walk that back pretty quickly. But there is an agenda to create a global currency, and the open borders component of this is absolutely crucial to the broader agenda. And you don't see it quite yet in the United States. I've been in Europe for the last few months, and I'll be here for another few months. You go to major cities across Europe now, and the natives are now in the minority. Right? If you go to Frankfurt, Germans are now in the minority. If you go to London, Brits are now in the minority, and they have an Islamic mayor. If you go to Malmo in Sweden, one of the largest cities in Sweden, Swedes are now in the minority. And what's going to happen at some point is people will wake up and they'll say, hey, I'm sharing this space with people who don't speak the same language as me, don't share the same culture as me, don't have the same history as me, don't have anything close to the same religion as me. You know, why do we have this thing called a national government and nations? Let's just get rid of that and pool our sovereignty together. And so I think that's a crucial part of the agenda. And I think, of course, the de-Christianization of our societies is also crucial. And if people want to know more about that, we also did an article. But great question. Sorry it took me so long to answer. I could go on and on, but I'm sure other callers want to chime in. So
let's go to Wayne in Gregory, South Dakota. Wayne, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a lifelong farmer, and I'm just wondering if what's going on in agricultural America right now, which most people are unaware of, but we're in a period of about 4 years of losing money for the most part out here. And there's a massive transfer of wealth going on, the way I see it, because farmers taking on more and more debt, going broke and everything. And I'm just wondering, I know China's even, I read, is getting involved in purchasing land. Saudi Arabia's purchasing land, farmland in America. And I don't know if this is on your radar, if you've, you know, are into this aspect. But there is a crisis in rural America. The rest of the economy appears to be doing well, but the farm economy is going down the drain.
Alex, are you able to address that?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's fortuitous that you asked that question right now. I'm actually one of the many projects, one of the irons I've got in the fire right now is an article about the global war on farmers. You know, I used to live in Brazil. I used to live in South Africa. So I've kind of seen this up close and personal all over the world, and then come to find out the same thing is happening in my home country. What is happening, and, you know, China is I think the most blatant example, because they don't even have to bother hiding what they're doing. They'll just point a gun at you and say, you know, dismantle your shack and move to this apartment that we've got you in the city and get off this land, and we're going to, you know, mechanize all these farms and get rid of the independent farmer and the peasant and all the rest of it. But this is a concerted global effort. It's happening all over the world. It's happening in America using different means. You know, one of those is bankrupting the farmers. Another is destroying them with regulations, making it basically a crime for them to do just about anything. Treat your own animals and your own land the way that farmers have always done. So there is an absolutely deliberate, orchestrated effort, I think, to knock out independent farmers, independent ranchers, and kind of centralize control over all these under some sort of kind of corporatist, government-controlled, government, if not government-run, certainly government-backed operation. Wow. And, you know, it's been understood for a long time that he who controls the food controls the people. And if they can knock out the independent farmers and knock out the independent ranchers, you know, it makes controlling the people that much easier.
Wayne, thank you for the call. Up against a break right now, but we'll be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America, and Forrest and David, Marie, hang on the line. You'll be next here on Crosstalk. Alex Newman is our guest. His article at thenewamerican.com. We'll be right back.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewradio.com. an information operation is well underway in America. Another word for that is brainwashing. And part of brainwashing is to intimidate people into groupthink, group consensus. And recent surveys reveal that a majority of Americans fear disclosing their political beliefs. Indeed, another poll shows that 71% of Americans say political correctness has silenced discussions society needs to have. 58% have political views they're afraid to share. My friends, political correctness is a masking term for cultural Marxism. And the cultural Marxists that came to America in 1933 at the invitation of John Dewey deliberately stated their goal was to change the worldview of Americans. One way to do that is to intimidate them into silence and to put them into fighting groups where Americans are afraid of freedom of speech.
Yes, folks, it's called the Committee to Save the World Order. You can read about it at thenewamerican.com. Just do a search under Alex Newman or some of the key words from the article itself. Globalist CFR G9 Committee must save world order from Trump. Taking your calls and comments today, our next caller is Forrest in Ashland, Oregon. Hi, Forrest, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you.
Hello, Forrest.
Hi.
Yeah, turn off your radio, please. You're getting confused.
Hi. Thank you.
Forrest, please turn off your radio.
Okay, you're cutting on and off.
Okay, let's go to David in Boise, Idaho then. David, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. You know, just listening to this, it's kind of got me thinking. This world order seems to me to be a real setup for the coming of the Antichrist. And it was interesting to hear the caller talking about the farming. And I agree that this is happening all over the world. When I lived in Africa, it happened in Rhodesia, and it's happening in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems... several years ago of watching the Left Behind movies where the Antichrist...
I appreciate, and I don't want to go too far down that line right now with so few minutes left, but Alex, this whole aspect of coming together as a one world order and a one world leader, and we know what's prophesied in the book of Revelation as far as that Antichrist to be revealed. This is the trajectory that this Committee to Save the World Order is on, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I think the eschatological implications here are crystal clear to anybody who's been reading their Bible and who's familiar with prophecy. You know, that's the direction that this is all going in. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to have a totalitarian global state where nobody will be able to buy or sell without taking the mark next week or next year or even 10 years from now. But we, you know, when John wrote those things 2,000 years ago, that must have sounded totally wild to people. You know, the idea that we were going to have a global government that would be able to control whether people could buy or sell, that just must have sounded totally wild. And yet now we are privileged to live in a time where we can see these things coming into being, right? So, you know, it might not happen in our lifetime. It might not happen even in our grandkids' lifetimes. But we now see that it's possible. We now see the trajectory that this is going in. And I think people need to be reading their Bibles if they really want to understand what's going on in the world.
Thanks, David.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Marie in Pensacola, Florida. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you today?
Fine, Marie.
Awesome. God bless you. Awesome, awesome program. And I just wanted to share with you, it's pretty much I'm in agreement. It's not looking very good. And this world order, it does point into what was prophesied.
Mm-hmm.
So many thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
And it's everything seems to be pointing into that direction. And we just, my personal belief, we just need to seek God now more than ever. It might not happen, you know, right away.
Indeed.
But, you know, it's in the making there.
Thank you, Marie. Indeed, seeking God is absolutely critical. We don't lose faith, folks. Don't fear. God hasn't given us a spirit of fear, but a power and love and of sound mind. God is still sitting on the throne. Okay, He is sovereign. He's in control, and it's important for us to recognize that, Alex.
It's you know, so important that we mention this, and thank you so much for that caller, and thank you, Jim. I couldn't agree more. And you know, I often quote from Psalm 2:2 and from Psalm 2:4, where it talks about the kings of the earth conspiring against the Lord and His anointed, and then God looks down and He ridicules them, He laughs at them. So, you know, you're absolutely right, Jim. There's absolutely no cause for us to be fearful, but you know, we do need to be doing the things that the Bible says we need to be doing. We need to seek God. We need to you know, be praying for our nation, for our leaders, for our children, and we need to be reproving evil, right? Go to Ephesians 5:11. That's one of the things I live by. You know, have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but reprove them and expose them. And so we all need to be doing all these things, and we absolutely should not be scared. So thank you for that call. I really appreciate it.
And let's pick up one last call. Laura in Wisconsin. Laura, you're on the air.
Hi, Jim. I just wanted to ask about these that's marching through, because they seem like the Foreign Legion of years ago, where they would mob together, and these people do get paid. They get paid their free birth certificate, their free driver's license.
Are you talking about the caravan through Mexico right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
And these they call them illegal immigrants, but are they more like the mercenaries of the Foreign Legion, the part of the global people?
Great. I'm going to have Alex comment on that, and I would like to also refer you to an interview we did just the other day with a representative from Numbers USA, as they were talking about that. But Alex, I know there's a lot of concern about this caravan. One of the goals, of course, is to pierce through this border here, and we're down to about a minute and a half, but give us your thoughts on it.
Yeah, well, you know, thank you to the caller. I think what's happening with the mass immigration is absolutely a key component of this agenda to move toward a world order and to break down the nation states. If people want to learn more about this, we just did a special issue on the deep state in action, and I have two articles in there dealing with this topic, primarily focused on Europe, because I've been based in Europe for a while, and I'm here at the moment. So I hope people will read that so that you can understand what's going on here. I mean, these same globalists who blew up all these countries are now posing as humanitarians by inviting all their victims to come live in other countries at taxpayer expense. There's nothing humanitarian about this. This is part of a very twisted agenda. And, you know, people need to see through the fake news and see what's really going on. So thank you to the caller. It's important, I think, that we're discerning in these times. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that we still have compassion. And ironically, I think God will probably use a lot of this for His own, you know, plan. So
right.
Despite what the globalists may intend, it won't work out quite the way they think. But I think it absolutely is a big part of the agenda. So thank you to the caller.
Thank you, Laura, for dialing us today. Alex, what do you want to leave with our listeners today on this issue? You've got half a minute here.
Awesome. Well, you know, thanks again, Jim, for having me on the program. I hope people will go read this article. We only got to cover a part of this, and I hope people will follow the links there, too, because there's, you know, so much more that, of course, we won't have time to go into, but this is all so important to the future of our country, your children, your churches, your families, and your communities. So I hope everybody will get educated, and as Jim said, you know, God has not given us a spirit of fear. This is nothing for us to be scared of, but it is something we ought to be aware of, and we need to be doing what God has told us we need to be doing.
Amen. Occupy till I come, he said. Folks, you can read the article at thenewamerican.com, thenewamerican.com. Alex Newman, our guest today. As always, Alex, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Jim.
And folks, be informed on these critical issues and certainly bathe them in prayer. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.